And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 78 of Fans of Power. I am Joe Mato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. What's happening, T-Rex?
Oh, I don't know what to say.
Well, yeah, I know it's your probably one of the inevitable things that we will get to that should be fun to talk about, I'm sure.
I'm doing good.
I'm doing good.
I'm anxious to. Lead the way here.
All right.
I'm going to be sitting here thinking in my head, you know.
We'll get to that part eventually. I know it should be interesting, but first, we can mention at least now everybody that's been waiting to know when are the Ultimates going to ship. Well, I believe Super 7 just announced this week that it's June 30th that they're going to be shipping. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was the date they gave for the Ultimates, is June 30th. And also that they're going to start taking pre-orders for their next wave of Classics, and I think that's May 5th. Do you know if that is correct, Tyler? I just want to make sure if that was May 5th. I don't want to give a date that's wrong.
I for some reason, I was thinking it was tomorrow, but you're probably right. It probably was May 5th.
Okay.
For some reason, I was thinking like May 1st, but yeah, I think you're right. I think it was May 5th.
Okay. All right. Well, and hey, at least one thing for May 1st, I guess I can mention. You know, it was maybe a couple weeks back. There was somebody that tagged me of this picture of a single-carded Horde Trooper. And, you know, everybody was going bananas for it. And somebody, you know, like tagged me, of course, and said, Joe, come on, what's up? Is this a custom or is this real? And I could tell immediately looking at it, I said, no, that's not a custom. That looks like that's something Mattel maybe had planned and was going to, you know, put out in single card. And somehow one popped up onto eBay. People went bananas. Well, they did just, there was an announcement that I think you're talking about May 1st. So tomorrow, I believe that they're going to start on Shop Mattel, not Maddie Collector, but shopmattel.com. They're going to be offering single carded Horde Troopers. So, I mean, for everybody out there that wants to get ready to try to get some Horde Troopers, I mean, you want some more, you want them carded, go to Shop Mattel tomorrow. I believe it's tomorrow. And they're going to start selling single carded Horde Troopers. I thought that was pretty cool, especially for the ones who wanted those.
Absolutely. And to know that, I mean, Hover Robots are going to be available.
Yeah.
Anti-Attorney He-Man will be available. I mean, there's a lot of things that were really painted up as if, like, well, if you're doing good, then I guess, you know, thumbs up your ass, you know. It's
and free shipping.
The same sales pitch us fans are given every time that new stuff is thrown out. You better know your people. And, I mean, even Despair is going to be available to purchase, too. So it's
exactly. She was a club exclusive, and they're going to have Despair listed. They, and I think they said anything over $39, you get free shipping. And also, if you sign up for their newsletter to get, you know, for their email, they'll give you a code that you can use on that day to get another $10 off. So that's some good deals you could be saving. They're at reasonable prices. You don't have to worry about inflated eBay stuff, especially like you said, when looking for the Hover Robots, Despara, and I believe even the Energy Zoids. So they're going to have plenty of stuff on there tomorrow. I believe it's all tomorrow. So everybody get ready tomorrow to, I guess, go shopping crazy.
Yeah, I hope everybody can really take advantage of this and pick up the ones that eluded a lot of people who refused to sign up or didn't have an opportunity or something went wrong with the website when people tried to order and stuff like that. And Thundercats are going to be available as well, I believe.
Yes. So,
It's a good opportunity for a lot of people to get caught up on this stuff, and I'd like to see a lot of that stuff get moved, and a lot of fans fulfill a lot of their wish list. There you go.
Sure.
You know, because I'd like to get another set of Hover Robots myself.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And like three, you said, 3 is not enough.
No. I mean, those are army builders. Those are definitely army builders. So I'm sure you never know. They might go quick if people get on there and start going nuts. But, hey, hopefully everybody will get at least what they want. So that's at least the news for, I think, everything relevant to figures and stuff. And before we go into the next quick little, other topic, I just wanted to get out some shout-outs. I wanted to give a shout-out to Josh Hale. He's a listener that, I mean, he gave a good, comment last week. I told him to give him a shout out. And somebody known as Sam Haynes / Trick or Treat, he's got a couple names, you know, he's somebody on Facebook, gave him a shout out. And Richard Garcia, he does fantastic, amazing art, and I want to give him a shout out as well. So I promised them I would, and I wanted to make sure I didn't forget, because I know when I get rambling, my mind just explodes and goes everywhere.
Okay, well, since you've done that and you cut me off last week and I didn't get to do my shout-outs, I didn't get to do any of my epic moments, I didn't get to do recommendations or anything like that.
I just cut you
So,
the hell off,
and
yeah.
I'm like, dear God, I did not give my shout-out, and was to artist Kevin Sharp.
Oh, yeah.
I met him at a local convention here in town last week, and I had every intention, Kevin, if you hear this, to share my time of talking with you and talking about He-Man with you, because he was a fan of the podcast and recognized my voice,
Oh, that's cool.
and that's when I charged him for an autograph instead of the other way around. So,
Oh,
but
yeah.
it was great seeing him and seeing his artwork. I was familiar with his artwork, as it turns out, and does some beautiful artwork. He's on Facebook. He's got a Kickstarter going that he's working on getting off the ground for I believe it's a two comic book thing he's got going on there. I think The Wreckage, and I have it in my collector's room anyway. But
Okay.
Kevin's got something he's got going on there, and check out his artwork. He's done some beautiful stuff on He-Man, and he's a good guy too. So
Yeah, he's a cool
I
guy.
apologize for the late shout out, but you can blame Amato for that one.
Blame me. I tore everything up
Blame
he was going
play.
to
Yeah,
say.
Joe was trying to hurry up and get his plugs in and all that and so forth. So,
I just put it to
but
the end.
I don't let me before you take off there, I want to make sure there's nothing else I forgot to do. I think that was the one thing I wanted to do last week. So I'm just trying to make sure
Okay.
here, because
Because you know what's going to happen next, that this might go into a lot of different rambling, but we'll say it anyways. They also made another announcement that, time to get excited. They said that, I can't say it with a straight, you can't see my face, but there's not a straight face under here.
Well, you can see, I'm really jumping out of my chair and tearing it apart here.
We'll get ready because apparently, December 18th, 2019, we're going to have a new Masters of the Universe movie. I mean, they gave a date. I'm like, oh, jeez, people, this is not, I mean, hey, trust me, I do want a movie. I can't say this enough. I've been wanting a movie for what? What has it been, 15 years of these so-called, get ready, everybody, they're doing a script. They got a new director. They got a new studio. It just happens over and over. And do you really think they would keep to this magical date with no script, with no cast of actors? Nothing's gone into production, but they have the date, though. It's not going to happen. And apparently, I think McGee's out. And another person is in now again. So it's like there one another, here comes another. It's so sad to see. I can't say it enough. It's so sad to see what keeps happening with this property. And then, it creates this false hype and excitement that I know some people say, hey, well, it's good. It's a buzz for Masters of the Universe. It's getting it out there. No, I mean, it's been doing it for 15 years. That's not helped. It does nothing but get people upset. Quit with this nonsense. If there's something official that happens, I'm all aboard. I'm ready for it. But go ahead, Tyler, you jump in because this magical date of the movie, now that, yes, it's coming, which it's not going to. I wish one would, but it ain't gonna.
I mean, we've said before already that it's in the wrong hands. Sony is not the company that you want a He-Man movie from. I mean, how many mistakes do you want to point out that they've done? That and you like this, this I mean, you want these people to, I mean, are you that desperate for a below average He-Man movie? Because that's what you're going to get from Sony. I mean, they can't help but put their fingers all over, whatever they're putting out. And I just, and I as far as I've read, it came from a few legitimate websites that I trust, but I saw that David Goyer, writer of the Nolan Batman trilogy and writer on Blade 1, 2 and directed Part 3, he's done a few other things too, has been asked to pen a new script. And I mean, that's probably the first bit of legitimacy we've heard in a long time. I mean, legitimate or not, I did not care about the idea of McG directing, so that was about as illegitimate as it possibly could have been.
Right.
But I mean, not that it really means anything, because writers can be asked several times, and just because they happen to work on it at some point, they'll still be given credit, but they didn't do a whole lot on it. If people have watched stories of the making of Superman and the making of Batman and the making of so many other Conan the Barbarian, where they give credit to one big writer, but several people took cracks at the script and they'd been working on it for years and stuff like that. So even though David Goyer has been asked to write this script, it still does not mean that it's going anywhere. And for all we know, we don't know, even though David Gorey is even aware of what this is, let alone can write something that's true to what we're expecting. So and dates change all the time. I mean, I've seen, just because we're given a release date does not mean it's actually going to happen.
And do you think, really quick, I don't mean to cut you off, but do you think the reason, obviously, they give this date just before the end of 2019, isn't it because Sony is like losing the rights or whatever for Masters of the Universe? Doesn't it end in 2019 and or something like that? I want to make sure.
Say something like that too, but I've been so like repressed to read anything with Sony's name attached to Masters of the Universe. I want to say I thought I had read that somewhere a while back that they weren't going to have these for very much longer, that it would go back to somebody else. And I also saw too that, I know the release date for the third Star Wars film in the new trilogy is no longer, it's not coming out at Christmas 28 or 2019. It's being moved, or no, wait, is it May? It's coming out in May 2019, I think, instead. Is that right?
Dear, do you happen to know? Because I actually have no clue. Would you know that one? Oh, if he talked, his mic was silent. It might have been muted.
Or he's not, he's reading a Playboy or something like that. With the centerfold completely out looking at it.
There you go.
But I immediately thought that when I saw that, the release date was going to be at Christmas, which I was under the impression that when Disney got Star Wars, they were going to release Star Wars movies at Christmas time. And I thought, well, since the third part of the trilogy is coming out in May, I think, because I went and looked immediately, like I didn't really look at the date when they announced the date for the third Star Wars movie. Like, wait a sec, they're going to release this at Christmas time, the same time as Star Wars? And I saw that Star Wars note was coming out in May.
Right.
And I may have to go back and double check the year that that's coming out. It may not even have any factor at all. I mean, coming out at Christmas time is a good time, to release a big tentpole movie. But yeah, I mean, if it was coming from anybody else, another company, Fox, Universal, even Warner Brothers, I would have a little bit more. Okay. But still, I mean, there's tons of stories of movies that have been given release dates, and they get moved back and moved back, or they're given a release date, and it no longer becomes an issue of making a quality movie. It's, well, we got to make the release date. Get somebody in here. Hire someone to play this blonde-haired muscular guy. Get a cheap paper mask on and put it on that other actor here. Make sure we get it out by May 19th or December
Yeah,
19th.
when it's exactly, you don't want to feel like, they're going to have to rush something too. That's
Well,
what
that's the
it
thing. Once you've set a release date, that is what you're doing. I mean, I think of the backstory of the making of Alien 3. When they announced that it was coming out in summer 1992, on the teaser trailer in theaters, no script was finalized. They had no set director or anything like that. But Fox says this movie's coming out on this date. So there now it becomes get somebody in here.
is.
We'll rewrite it as we go along. And of course, I love Alien 3. Both cuts of the film. But the story is that Fox went out to make a release date and not a good movie. And even though we still have a little bit of time, we're talking about a movie that's going to need a lot of post-production. I mean, the special effects in this movie alone, just for doing Skeletor and the evil warriors, let alone the heroic warriors, the battle scenes, the backdrops and backgrounds of Grayskull and Eternity, and there's going to be so many special effects for this particular movie. And David Gore is just now starting to write it, and we don't know, just you have no idea that Sony is going to approve whatever he writes, even though David Gore could write the best thing we've ever heard, could possibly think of for a He-Man movie. Doesn't mean Sony's going to approve it,
Sure.
and they'll pass it on to another writer that will agree more with him. We'll take kind of what Goyer did here, and then we'll bring in Jimmy from internship. Come in here, just.
Yeah, because like you said, there's no guarantees of
There's no
anything.
guarantees about this at all, and of course is there, and so many people picked up the story. I swear, the day that this was announced, I mean, there were multiple sources promoting the hell out of, oh, there's a release date for the He-Man movie, and then people popping up. Well, I'll tell you what, this is what they need to do to make a good He-Man movie. You need to make Skeletor a tragic figure here, and I'm like, you shut the hell up and don't ever touch the computer again.
Yeah.
I just, it's just, I. There, there is no concrete evidence we're going to get anything here. And I just feel like with no, I think they have a fill-in director, someone I've never even heard of.
Yeah, I don't
Which
have a
there's
clue.
nothing wrong with that. I have nothing wrong. I have a problem with a director with a bad reputation like McGee, but a director I've never heard of. I would give that man the benefit of the doubt. It's who you've cast to play the roles and knowing the direction that they want to go. If they want to make it, tongue in cheek, making fun of the source material and making fun of the Filmation cartoon, and then trying to do something that ties in with, a more modern, thing where they've got characters talking, as we said before, like they just walked off the set of Fast and Furious, and they've got Skeletor just all Moby picked on little kid and his past and this and
You'd
that.
hope that there's no nonsense like that. See, you figure, at least, if anything, they've heard so many fans, who complained about the 80s directing.
I do not. I would not think that Sony is going to listen to. I can't. Even though film production companies are well aware of the internet. I mean, and they have execs and people checking internet. I mean, like when Ben Affleck was cast as Batman, there wasn't a person who worked for Warner Brothers who did not know the backlash that came from that. So they are aware, but it's to like they're going to listen to what people who've kept this line alive for 30 years have to say about a movie that they happen to have the rights to. I just feel like
No, you know what I think?
they didn't listen to fans over Ghostbusters. They went through with it anyway. And look what happened with that.
No, it's true. I think that, at least with Masters, you're right. I don't know if they'll go to the fans, obviously, to see everything, but they're obviously, there's some that will know. I mean, just there's some movies that have that, the legend of, whether it was good or bad. That goes around usually everywhere, but I'm sure a quick search on Google, it'll basically show how almost everywhere there's people say, dang it, it was on Earth, it wasn't on Eternia. Dang it, was on Earth. They're going to see that so much. So what I mean is, not that I said I'm knocking 87 movies, I told you I've learned to love it and grown to love it, but for this movie, you know that it's going to need, like you said, some more special effects, big budget, something that's not a rush. Of course, I'm not expecting something of a serious level like Lord of the Rings. Masters is not going to
No, no,
do
no,
that.
no. I do not want something light and fluffy like some people in the He-Man fan community might paint a picture of. Like, I'm not talking about. I don't want any kind of BS that comes out of the DC Comics where you're killing off people just for shock effects and BS like that. I want a movie that's taking the source material seriously. I'm not talking brooding, crap like The Dark Knight Rises and stuff like that. I don't want He-Man moping along on Battlecat and why do F
No.
out here. None of that
Like,
stuff.
I'll give you an example. Here's my example. Like I said, this is just mine. I'm not saying this is how it should be. I'm just giving an example of a good tone of how it could be. Again, not something like Lord of the Rings, because that's not the feel we're gonna get. It's nothing that, you say, like, that's Oscar worthy. It's not an Oscar worthy movie, something like that. You think of Star Wars. Star Wars is something that it's not felt to be goofy. It's not, in my opinion, to be that epic Lord of the Rings feel, ancient feel. Star Wars is just a really good series, good movie, a lot of vast array of characters, action throughout, and a good story. And for me, I feel like Masters is that kind of thing, but for their world. So don't make it campy and corny and goofy and silly. Don't make it serious like Lord of the Rings. Just have fun like Masters should be. Don't make fun of it, like you said, in source material. But you have established characters, you have established settings, and so many backgrounds for all these characters. You could give it a good feel, and it could have a Star Wars vibe. Not saying it is Star Wars, but I mean what they did for Star Wars, the way that they made that movie and the feel of the characters. I feel like a mix of that for Masters could work. Because I don't ever watch Star Wars and think, ha, what a silly movie, or think, wow, what a serious movie. It's just a good balance. For me, it's a good balance of action and everything.
Well, yeah, in that sense too, where you're playing these characters as if it's this is what's really going on, like Star Wars. Like you don't feel like Han Solo, even though his character declines through those movies, but you'd like to think that if just an example here, if I mean, obviously, we're going to see He-Man duke it out with evil warriors in a movie. Whenever a movie comes out, we're going to see He-Man duke it out with Triclops, Beastman, Trapjaw, and God willing, they throw in, you know, two bat or jitsu or something outside the box of the typical, you know, lineup of evil warriors. But anyway, is that, you know, you want, when it comes to serious business here, you want to see, to connect what you just said, Luke confronting Vader. You're building this up as a serious moment here. You do not want to sell this as anything more than this is the first time He-Man is coming up against the evil warriors. You want to play this up as this is a group of badasses, and you want to establish that He-Man is not just a cliche hero on the screen. You want to establish that this guy is going to mow through these guys. Maybe take a couple slashes in the back from Beastman's claws, and you know, avoid, you know, Triclops' sword right across the face there. But he's going to, you know, squash all these guys and then meet his match when he, you know, confronts Skeletor. And that's got to be, you know, like Luke confronting Vader in Return of the Jedi, in the Emperor. Just really just building it up and building it up. And you want to make Skeletor just this unstoppable villain, a killing machine. Not necessarily a killing machine, but like how Vader was. Everyone felt before you really saw what Vader could do in the first Star Wars movie that this is the epitome villain. It's a good idea that you went ahead and went with Star Wars with this, because with Darth Vader, he's built up for three movies as the unstoppable villain. This is somebody that everybody fears, and who's going to stop him? Nobody except Luke. And you
Right.
built that up with He-Man too. And you know, I'd like the idea that it could possibly come to a draw in the first film. You know, well, not necessarily, because you know what the public doesn't take to it. I'd like for fans to get a clear-cut He-Man film that's not necessarily left up open for a sequel that we'll never get.
Sure.
But you know, like with most movies, you always kind of leave it up for a sequel. But I mean, you know, I feel like this, I've said before, this should not be so hard. It's messing with, you know, yes, it's. I imagine for some, if David Goyer, obviously he's got credentials. He's written the Batman films. He's written the Blade films and some other things as well. So, you know, he knows comic books and things like that. Whether you like what he did with those, that's another story. But, I mean, he understands that the dynamics of good and evil. I mean, the Blade One, it's the best of the Blade series. It was a damn good film. Still is. But I imagine if he goes and does his research about these characters, I'm hoping to God it's not just one particular, you know, because I'd like to think, and Mega Gear Max said this out to me a while back. I never did get around to answer. I always intended to answer that question on here, but this is a good time to bring it up as any. With a new movie, there are elements of all of everything that we've seen here. NYP, Filmation, you know, I guess you really can't use New Adventures or something like this, She-Ra. But there are things that you can use, pick this and pick that. Like, I love the idea of Two Armed Badger becoming two men, like two individual bounty hunters. Like, that's something from NYP I could buy into a movie. I could buy, you know, the idea of Trapjaw being this other warrior who goes through an accident, not, you know, doesn't have to be the same way it's done in the one shot mini comic or that one shot comic, but there are certain things from NYP, yes, that could work. Not King Grayskull. I do not care.
You and that hate for King Grayskull.
I do not. And honestly, I'd ra and not even a hero either. I'd rather, if you're going to do build up Castle Grayskull, have no answers for it. No answers at all. Build up to the audience who's seen this for the first time that this is the ultimate prize in this movie. This is what the good guys are trying to protect, and what the bad guys will do everything they possibly can to obtain. And leave it at that. Do not build, keep the sorceress, okay? Build her up as someone who's been guarding this forever, but do not explain, you know, anything. I mean, don't use Hero, don't use King Grayskull. Build up the mystery, what the toy line was started out with. I mean, leave a lot of imagination and mystique to these characters. You know, don't make a point to show us a clan of Clawfuls and a clan, you know, of this and
Well,
that.
don't say
Let,
that.
let,
Don't
let's
say
keep
that.
things simple here, because the simpler we keep this, we can make a good story. Do not overexplain the characters, except Adam and his journey to become He-Man, and Skeletor is evil because he's absolute evil. He's evil in its purest form. We do not need to see that this is some guy who was screwed out of his opportunity at the throne. I want him to be the most evil bastard that you could possibly think of, but
Right.
someone that you love to hate, like John Kreese in The Karate Kid. You know, you love. I mean, he needs to, like Franklin Jello Skeletor. I mean, he commands the screen. This is what we need from Skeletor in this movie as well. And He-Man needs to be somebody that, when the sword comes out of the sheath and he's slicing and dicing through various army, you know, army builders, whatever it be, robots, skeleton warriors, what is skeletons, whatever, that the audience has got to be jumping out of their seat because they can't wait to see He-Man kicking ass and stuff
Sure.
like that. Have a few humorous moments here and there, I guess, you know, where they got some banter between, you know, Teela and He-Man, you know, or Orko and Man-at-Arms, I guess, you know, because there's always got to be humor stuff like that. But
Yeah. Well, you know, here's one other thing is, you know, there's a it's interesting to, I guess, to try to explain that I've had a lot of people, I mean, well, everybody's seen where some people, you know, people say either they don't want the Adam to He-Man transformation or they just want He-Man. Either way, I'll just say I'm fine with it. But here's the one thing. People say, "Well, I want that Conan feel of how it used to be in the beginning." Here's my opinion. I ain't saying this is a fact or right. I know the look from those first early mini comics, and you could say even the DC comics, the looks of them had a more, I guess, gritty feel. But I'll tell you what, I never got a Conan feel. And here's why. Because in the Conan movies, I'm not seeing laser pistols, I'm not seeing vehicles with wheels that can transport through space and time. That's what separates Masters of the Universe from Conan, is the futuristic and lasers and beams. That's what I mean. This He-Man is not Conan. You're not gonna get Conan. And if you wanted this whole real Conan feel, that means you gotta take out, you know, blast every gun, every vehicle, all the flying stuff. It's gone. That's how you're going to get Conan. That's why when I hear this Conan thing, I'm like, I think they mean the look and style and maybe gritty look of He-Man, maybe, and how it looked more barbaric, because they always want to give the example of him coming from his tribe and looking savage. But for me, I never think Conan because of that. I don't know if that's making sense, but when I think Conan, I never envision laser rifles and battle rams and wind raiders. That's not in my mind. I mean, does that make sense? Or I mean, it's just my opinion. I ain't saying it's right, but I don't know what they're saying when they're just always talking about Conan feel for the early Alcala comics. It has
yeah,
to
but
be.
I see Conan and Earl Norm's artwork as well. When you've got him coming at the Snake Man with his battle axe, lunging back, get ready, going about with against the Snake Man. I mean, I see Conan in that. I see, Conan in a lot of. I mean,
Well, I
the
can
Golden
see that, but
Book.
what I mean is the feel of a movie or whatever they're talking about, where they're saying they
Well,
wanted
that's not making it look overly polished, too. When like the last Conan movie that came out, I refuse to see because it just looks like a big CGI mess with a lot of bad acting. You've got people talking as if like they're from 1995.
But do you see the separation of what I mean? How when I was a kid, I never thought, I mean, yes, I could talk about the gritty art, like you said, and the savagery of looking in the axes and the shields and
Well, that's
swords,
what
but
I mean. In a sense, if you want to be like Conan, it needs to be taken seriously. You need to see. People taking hits and beatings. I mean, it's not going to be a rated R Conan film. As much as I would love to see that, I'm not saying I need ultra violence in a He-Man movie because I do not. I don't want to see Webstor or Cobra Khan get killed in the movie. If you're going to do that, it needs to be in the third movie for you're wrapping it up. Cobra Khan and Fisto were going at it, and Fisto just, I mean, hits him so hard it just snaps his neck. Or something like that, but that's just I'm just making that up off the top of my head here. But Conan, it needs to be taken seriously. Like the first Conan that Arnold did is very serious, and I mean very little. I mean not a whole lot of special effects considering it's all a lot of it's done on screen and stuff like that too. And but that's kind of the feel you need to go for. That they wanted this to look and feel as well. Of course, they were also going for. What John Miller's wanted with that too is that they wanted to feel like this took place on our planet at some point in ancient history. Whereas the second Conan, aside from the camped up tone, still like Conan too, but there's more sword and sorcery. So there is some differences there. But
but you see my
the
vibe, like
first mini comics don't focus a whole lot on technology. Like it's there,
But
But
that's what I
it's
mean.
the minute.
That's what takes me out of that moment of the, like you said,
Well,
very savage.
it's not Conan. Just because
Right.
He-Man is a barbarian with a sword and axe, that's not Conan, because that's not the world that he's in. So, you make perfect sense on that. It's not Conan, and you can't do it like Conan. You can treat it with the same tone as Conan, not the Conan the Barbarian remake that sucked.
Right.
But a movie that, do not make Skeletor laughable. Do not make He-Man this corny, getting the Rock to play He-Man so he does a bunch of, goofy ass one-liners and stuff like that. No, you want people to get invested. And yes, I'm all for, I want a transformation sequence. I want to be, my eyes completely blown open,
Yeah, what we didn't get
with
in
Christmas,
87.
epic music blasting in the speakers. It's a shame James Horner's not alive, because I would love for him to score a He-Man movie.
That well, again, that was my, like we said last time about the 87 movie, about the moments people hated, and mine wasn't the thing about no Orko and no Battle Cat. It was the no transformation. I wanted that so badly. And I told you, I like how you always yell at me, but I always hate it at the end when he just holds up a sword and says, oh, I have the power. I'm like, that ain't nothing. I ain't here by the power of Grayskull. Nothing. I was like, I hated that part.
Oh my
So.
God, as a kid, I'm like, this is epic as it gets, and the music, Bill Conti's score is just kicking ass all over the place. He grabs it, and the veins are in his forearm, and just yanks
Ah.
out of the sword holder, and the
Ah.
sword just glows and booms with energy, and it's a
Well, hopefully
wonderful.
we get a proper transformation. If it ever
But
happens, maybe we'll get a
yes,
real
to
one.
have Adam pull the sword out in the heat of trouble for the first time. And the camera would spin around, and he holds it up, and boom. And I mean, I'd like to think that it would be something as similar to what Rob Land did in the episode Into the Abyss. I'm not a fan of the episode, but I do love the transformation sequence in that, where the energy of Grayskull's coming from the abyss and kind of booming past Teela and kind of coming up around Adam. That's what I'd like to see. Not I mean, the energy, like, it just surrounds Adam as he transforms. Like, I want it to be, at least for the audience, from a visual standpoint, to be just massive and epic. I mean, obviously, in the movie, that He-Man runs behind a tree, changes into He-Man, runs back in the action, it can't be that bombastic. But
No, I'll
you get
tell you
the
what
idea
the.
that when you see this, it needs to be as powerful as He-Man himself. You want, like me, I want to have a tear running down my face because I'm so excited and happy, and I want goosebumps all over my arms because the music's building and building and building and building. And you get someone with a good voice to yell, "I have the power by the power of Grayskull," and to
And
see
one time in
him.
Tyler, it has to only be one time in the movie, because this can't be like how sometimes in the cartoons you'd actually get a double time where he did it twice. It'll lose the impact. I think only one time we need to see that moment when Adam transforms to He-Man, and you're like you said, you're in awe to see this moment. And because then if it happens again, it's like, eh. So the thing is, we got to see it one time, and then of course later in the movie, if he's back to Adam, and then he's, needed as He-Man again. Maybe when it comes to that scene, he's already He-Man. I think it would be overkill to see the transformation two times, which also leads me to why I don't want this to be an origin story. They can pretty much, in the first 5 minutes, basically do a little
That's
monologue
why I
about
feel
the.
like a Lord of the Rings kind of prologue would be fine,
Yes,
where
exactly.
you kind
Explaining.
of explain what this world is, the struggle between good and evil, that they're fighting over Castle Grayskull,
And this is
but
the chosen one.
a new hero has been prophesied to come and help bring a greater balance to good and to help vanquish evil, and then you're off and running.
Yeah, and
And
I don't want it to, because that's the other thing is I don't want it to drag out the movie. I don't want it to feel like we're dragging out, here's the origin of Prince Adam, blah, 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 blah. He finally becomes He-Man. No, he's already He-Man. Like you said, they could do that in just a quick little thing at 5 minutes at the beginning of the movie. Explain, like you said, about the story of Eternia, the one that's destined to become the hero, and then just move on. You get right into the story, you get into action. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think one transformation would be perfect for the movie, because too many in the movie, I think, is overkill. At least for me, I feel like you lose the impact, of seeing that transformation. Like after the first time, we see it the second time, it's like, I don't know if you'd get all, psyched up. I think it
I'd
would.
be fine with no more than two. Two transformations. You get the first big one, the moment that really like gets people behind, He-Man, and then the second one be to build up for his fight with the evil warriors. Like, when he's gonna throw down as He-Man with I like to think, you know, eight evil warriors in the Skeletor's army of whatever it could be. And then you go into Snake Mountain or fighting on the Jawbridge of Grayskull against Skeletor or something like that. But the second one would not be as bombastic as you want to kind of shorten it up a little bit. The first one needs to be long and lengthy to build up what this is going to be like for Adam every time he turns into He-Man. Of course, for a story standpoint, in future movies, you kind of get it going a little bit more, like you do in, you know, the animated series. But
Sure.
that first transformation sequence needs to have a piece of music behind it that people want on their computers, or they want to listen on their iPod. They're all thinking, "Oh my gosh, this is like turning into He-Man right now." Like the score for this movie needs to be so good that people are just clamoring to buy it when it becomes available. Like, this has got to be something that people just, oh, like Skeletor's theme, He-Man's theme, going in about a theme for Castle Grayskull, a theme for, plotting the assault on Grayskull, where Skeletor's in his council chamber, looking at the hover screen,
Almost a little bit of like a Filmation vibe or something,
yeah,
almost.
where there's, you know, sitting around, like he's summoned them all, and he's looking at it, and it's got a vision of Grayskull, and as he's, you get this really cool building evil score or something like that. I mean, gosh, that's why I wish
It'd be nice.
James Horner was still alive, man. That guy could do a kick-ass He-Man score.
It'd be nice, yeah, because like the transformation in Filmation, that music always did it for me. Even MYPs, I even got into it when that built up when he would get ready to transform. The only one I always say that did nothing for me, besides there wasn't one in the movie, but the New Adventures, it did nothing. That music
Yeah,
was
the new
so.
adventures is lackluster in
Yeah.
comparison. I mean,
Yeah.
it's
No
sick.
chills. Yeah, we
Yeah.
gotta have something that gives you chills, that emotion. Because like how when you go to see a Superman movie, that score, of course. But like there's certain musics that just get you going. It gives you chills,
that's
gives you
what this
goosebumps.
movie needs. I mean, the help this movie I mean, like with any movie, a great score, not just some random schmuck you just hired to put in here. Put a score on this, slap it on a CD, and get it out there.
It's
It's like,
gotta
man,
be
who wants
good.
somebody? I mean, a guy who can do a good score for a movie that's like this. I think, I can't remember if Michael Kamen is. I think he's passed away. I think he's the guy who did the score for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He did the score for Die Hard. I
Yeah,
think.
that's what I mean. It's got to be memorable because there's every movie you talk about, you hit a certain, like you play a certain music or you hear this on whatever it's trivia or something, you're like, hey, you immediately think of that. It's this movie, it's that movie. But if there's some that just suck, you can't even connect them half the time. You're like, I don't know what the music was in the
Yeah,
background for that.
I enjoy the Marvel movies. They don't have memorable scores. Like, I don't. A good movie has also got a memorable score. Like, pieces of music that get you excited. Like, I mean, John Wick. I mean, John Wick 2 that just came out. They had some memorable music in it. And I like to get the music from that as well. But
Should think of Batman. There's Batman, there's Superman. I mean, you just know when you hear that, like, for Batman. Conan.
Predator, The Terminator, Conan.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, Aliens.
And wouldn't it be nice for Masters to have their score that everybody can quote?
Definitive. I mean, in a theme that says "Masters of the Universe," like the first Ninja Turtles film, or even all three of them for that matter. John Dupres, who I think he did the score for those movies as well, like, at least the instrumental music. It's a memorable score, and it says Turtles, and that's I feel like movie scores are severely lacking in a lot of films today. And He-Man is that is that's an essential key to making the moments in a He-Man movie a lot more impactful when you've got a great score behind it.
Definitely.
Can I just say I'm a little disappointed in Joe right now?
What would I do?
You're talking about movies with memorable music that immediately
The
tie to the
13th.
film.
Friday the
Hey,
13th.
yes, thank you.
I knew you were gonna get, believe me, it was there, but I was like, well, we're talking about all these other ones that those actions or whatever. But, oh yeah, Friday the 13th, my God, you just know that. Whether it's the sound effects or the instrumental for that, that's another iconic one. It gives you chills. I'm glad you brought that up, Dirt. So
Yeah.
yeah. Oh
Yeah.
hell,
All the
Halloween,
good horror movies from
Halloween.
Nightmare and Halloween, of course, I mean, they've all, of course, anything John Carpenter does, he's got a memorable score to everything he does.
I can't remember. Speaking of scores, real quick, there was one that I think it was for Beverly Hills 3 that I hated. It was like this.
Top three.
Oh, I'm sorry, Beverly Hills Cop. I left off the cop. Yeah, Beverly Hills Cop 3. There was some thing that they were playing over and over, like this one certain kind of action, like a music sound effect.
Like a certain action beat that they kind of cycle through the movie.
Yeah, and it felt like they were trying to get the vibes from the first two, and it just didn't work. I don't know, maybe that was me, but it was some of Beverly Hills. See, that's what I mean. There's some that just don't do it for you, and you can't really remember them. But yeah, we'll see what they do with this Masters movie, if it happens. So again, people out there...
Like I said, once we start hearing people being cast and stuff like that, that's when you start kind of like, okay, you know, I mean, a release date, these are all things that can easily change.
Because that's not even a guarantee. When you look at, like you said, when they were doing the Superman movie, when Kevin Smith was working on that, as we talked about before, and you know, you see Nicolas Cage was in the Superman outfit and they were doing scenes and shots, and that went away and nothing ever happened. So, you know, you're not guaranteed.
Then he went on and destroyed two Ghost Rider films. So,
oh God. So nothing is guaranteed. Like I said, until you see the actual real trailer in the theaters, just wait. Like, again, we want it to happen, but just don't get hyped up and think about it. It's almost still 3 years away. I mean, we're still in 2017. We're at the, you know, just the 4 months into 2017, and you got to wait till the end of 2019. So this is a long ways away.
We won't be getting anything at San Diego because David Gore, I can't imagine him churning out a script that's going to be so great. Sony's like, oh dear God, you know, hire this man, cast that man. We're going to have something big for San Diego. And like, no, that ain't going to happen either. It's just going to be one of those things that, you know, they've really got to, you know, well, the script's got to be approved too. And until that gets approved, I can't see anything else. I mean, we can always be wrong. I mean, but it just feels like, you know, come on, people. If you haven't learned by now, then I guess you're just never going to. But to get any kind of, you know, legitimate hope over this, it's just like, don't get suckered into this right now. You know, yes, I would love to see it as long as it's treated well. But
I hope so. It's just like you said.
I hope so too. But because there's, it could be done. It could be so, so good. It could be better than anything we've seen. It could be better than Filmation. It could be better than the 87 movie. It could be better than anything you've seen in NYP. It has the potential to be everything we want it to be and then some. It's just putting it in the hands of people that, you know what, there's some interesting characters here. There's an interesting story here. There's some fascinating, you know, creatures and things like that in this mythology. But unless you get somebody who loves sword and sorcery and can appreciate a villain with a skull face who commands an assortment of crazy but just badass villains and a hero that rides a green tiger and teams up with a guy with a long net and a bee guy and you know, stuff like that, they have to buy into this for this to work. David Gore can be a great writer, a reputable writer in Hollywood, but unless he buys into this mythology here, it means nothing to any of us, to anybody who listens to this, to anybody who thinks we're all full of crap and we don't know anything or whatever. Still, this movie will mean nothing to any of us if these people are not behind. Why you and I were doing this podcast, why people are buying books and T-shirts and current Super 7 stuff. They get it. They're behind it, and that's what we need from people at Sony, from David Goyer to whatever the director that happens to fall into the chair to the guy who's cast as He-Man himself. They have to.
So all you can do is just into it. Basically, just cross your fingers and hope for the best. But yeah, as for the hype of it, like I said, figured might as well get it out of our system because you know what's been said. You know everybody's talking about it. Might as well give what we thought behind it. And now we just wait. And like I said, if it happens, cool. If not, hey, we've been through it before. But so I guess that was our good rant on that because I knew we'd have to spit going on it. So well, I'll tell you what. How about now since we're done with that, you transitioned to something good. We got a character spotlight, and I know he's one of your favorites, so why don't we go into a character spotlight?
Yeah, now we can talk about something that's guaranteed good here. And we are going to talk about Sauron, the evil reptile with the laser-shooting mouth.
Who didn't do that in the movie. No, but go ahead.
Who didn't do that in the movie, but he did it in the mini-comic, and he did it in the Star comics and on the card art for the He-Man action figure. So... But yes, we are talking about Sauron, and oh boy, where to start on this character? I mean, as a kid, cool, but to me, Blade and Beastman were more memorable, and I didn't appreciate Sora until I got a little bit older than in my very early years of seeing this movie. Arguably the most visually stunning character amongst the evil, well, in the movie. I mean, from a visual standpoint, you look, he's the most complicated costume and design with throat apparatus that you know, gives him the lizard, you know, throat breathing,
bubble thing.
Yeah, that and the mask, the eyes, the way that Ponsmore moves around all lizard like, you know.
He got into his role. You could tell he got into that character.
Yeah, it was, and it's just the, and I understand, you know, everyone knows the backstory, matter if you don't, that Sorod was a character created so Gary could have skills or kill off somebody on screen that was not a previous action figure.
Obviously, and he went through some different visions too. Didn't, you know, William Scott have a lot of weird different. Yeah, because he had a lot of different versions. Like one, it almost looked like, I almost thought he had like an Egyptian kind of like helmet on his body for some of the early concepts that Stout had. But yeah, Sorod, there was like multiple versions until we got the one that, you know, obviously was used for the movie, which, you know, like you said, is a
thank you, William Stout, for your wonderful contributions to this one of the greatest American films of all time.
Well, was it the real quick? Was it the movie or was it the toy of Sorod that you had or seen first?
I didn't have the toy at all as a kid. I only had Blade and Gwildor. And I sought Blade out. Like, what? As like, he was the first one I had to have, because Blade, I mean, it was just like, you know, as much as a kid, the bad guys are so bad, and I'm like, man, Blade is just badass as a kid. I was just like, I have to have Blade. But Sorod, no, it was the movie, seeing him in the movie, and I was not pulling on Joe Mata. That ain't Merman. That ain't good. Man, this is stupid, man. And then broke my juice box at the TV.
I enjoy new character.
I bought into this. I bought into Carr. I didn't sit and question, you know, who was that? You know, talking like that idiot Coughlin NYP. You know, I did not.
I liked it. I mean, no, I like
love Sauron. He was an awesome, awesome looking villain. And I almost felt bad for him when I would watch him get killed off in the movie, because I just felt like, wow, he's. I mean, but I was not sure, like, did he just evaporate and go somewhere else? As a kid, it just wasn't, obviously it was painful, but it was just, yeah, wasn't whatever. As a kid, is he dead? He died?
Yeah, now, real quick, when you said you got Blade and you got Gwildor, now, did you buy these on the store, or at the store when they first came out, or were they hand-me-downs? Were they?
No, Blade and Gwildor, I got it both at... not at the same time, but I got them both at a KB Toys.
And was Sorod up there too, and you just passed him?
I don't remember seeing Sorod at all. I would have thought that had I seen him, I would have, but I don't remember. You know, like I said, this was, I think, before my brother was born. So that I would have been, you know, about 4 years old, maybe even 3 years old at the time. And, I remember just seeing Blade, like, visually, like, there he was on the toy rack for me to come to go grab. And Sorod, had I seen it, and it would be years in person. And I found Sorod from some kid who was selling some of his toys, and he had Sorod but no helmet. So it was just Sorod, no gun, but the spark actually worked.
You know, that stuff kills me. I don't know how that, I mean, it's because I told you, I always tried to really take great care of my toys, you know, when I was a kid. And I've never understood. I've seen so many people that show these loose Sorods with the helmet gone. I'm like, how? Yeah. How do you mess with your play with your figures so
I naturally much would have it? Thought it would have been a piece that would have been permanently put on him, not something that would be so easily, you know,
like
a belt or a harness or even one of the weapons.
This is my childhood one. And like I said, he was the one I was more excited to get than Blade and Gwildor and everything. Now, God, this better not break on camera, because I'll be pissed off at you, even though you're not asking. But I'm going to see if his spark feature still.
Yeah, there they go. Yeah,
I love this damn thing. I was like, you know, when you're a kid, the gimmicks is what got you. Whether it was glow-in-the-dark
hey,
stuff.
Hey, does it still smell like that kind of burning smell?
The sulfurish stuff?
Yeah.
The flint? Oh, yeah. It does. I got a little hole, so I could sniff through my eye hole in the nose right around here.
Like Joe, I was getting high off the sulfur.
But see, that's what it was. I mean, these kind of gimmicks, is what really sucked you in as a kid. Like, I loved, like I said, glow-in-the-dark things, light-up figures, and this. I just remember I loved turning off the lights and just shooting and just having the sparks go. It was so freaking cool. So he was one of my favorites. I mean, obviously, out of all three of the movie figures, this was my favorite. And I still actually, believe it or not, I always tell you I saved the card back art, the tops of those from every figure. But for Sorod, it's the only one where I still have his entire card back. I was able actually to slide. I was fascinated about the package, even though the package looked the same for everybody.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is some of the card art too, or like the one featured in the movie figures, had the three figures featured prominently on the back of the card, like featured in the He-Man movie. And then you had, you know, two sets of, like, you know, the current newer characters, like Clamp, Scareglow, Ninja, and some of the Snake Men or something like that.
Sure. And for his, I just wanted to take care of the whole thing. So I got the bubble. I got the whole card back. It's like I didn't want to wreck nothing. I was fascinated with this guy. So, yeah, and then seeing him in the movie, I mean, of course, I loved him in the movie. And, yeah, he didn't shoot sparks out of his, you know, mouth in the movie. But you've seen that done in the comics. The other weird thing is the mini comics.
Whoa, back up. What did you just say?
I said, didn't he shoot sparks in the mini comics, but he didn't.
I thought you said he shot him in the movie. I'm like, no, he did not.
No. I said he didn't do it in the movie. I said, but he did it in like comics. And
yeah, in the Star comics, yeah, he does that. And then in the mini comic, yeah, he shoots sparks out of his mouth.
Yeah. Here's the one thing about the Cosmic Key one. I always thought I was missing something. Maybe I looked at it wrong. Comic. I thought he was holding like a staff. So I remember going back into my package saying, where's the staff at? I always thought he was supposed to have a staff because I thought he was holding one in the mini comic. It used to freak me out. So I always
holding a staff of some kind. It looks like a drumstick.
Did they ever explain to you? You ever know what the hell that was supposed to be? Because I thought my figure was missing a weapon. So
he's not, I mean, obviously this mini comic was very quickly thrown together. I mean, it's
4 or 5 pages.
Yeah, it's extremely short. I think it's like six pages total. I mean, it's. I mean, it could be argued probably. I mean, not the worst, but.
And they came from the evil cloud that Skeletor was granted.
Yeah, Paraclaw Skeletor. I mean, it's definitely featuring, you know, the 87 stuff with Eternian and the more recent Skeletor variant, Paraclaw Skeletor, but. I mean, it just seemed like it was, you know, that you'd like to see something a lot more, you know,
polished maybe out. For a movie.
I mean, it is a mini comic, but it's so short.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, you're just anticipating something really big or just something great to read.
Yeah, and the writing is very bad in it, you know, when you got Wildor saying, hey, you're in front of my vacation here and stuff like
that. Yeah, it was just.
It comes out of the water.
Yeah, because like I said, he would have, I mean, he deserved more. I mean, especially after in the movie, you know, like you said, he gets wiped out. And which, well, we can bring, we said this before, we'll bring it up again. But I always like to talk about that part in the movie where he got killed and how I said Skeletor basically, you know, was saying something about a price for failure to all of them that were there. You know the exact line. What did Skeletor say to all the evil, or I mean, the warriors?
It's like, then He-Man's free. He's like, You were all aware of the penalty for failure.
Okay, he says that, and after he's saying all that, you see, and from my perspective, not saying it was right, but it looks like Sorod was gonna try to grab for his pistol because he knew what Skeletor said. He probably has obviously seen, maybe they've known, they've seen Skeletor, maybe when somebody fails him, that Skeletor will either kill all of his warriors, maybe he kills one, maybe this is something that's happened before. And so Sorod is fearing for his life. He reaches for his pistol, but before he can draw and shoot it out on Skeletor, you know, blasts him and evaporates him away. And of course, then you see Beastman, you know, begging up for him. But I mean, what do you think? Like, with Skeletor in that line, I mean, what do you think their perspective is of hearing that? What they're expecting to happen of the, you know, price for failure, or, you know, for failing him?
Yeah, when I started thinking about that years ago, I started thinking, like, the Skeletor's warriors have got to be constantly efficient and always managing to succeed the majority of the time. Or it's one of those things where Skeletor on occasion, you know, I mean, like you see in Filmation and NYP, you know, he kind of does a lot of boasting and a lot of hot air sometimes, and that he may threaten to kill some of his men and never actually does it. But I get the vibe in this that when he says it, you see, like when he jumps up off the throne and yells, "Then He-Man's free," and then Carr kind of lurches, like jumps back in fright. Blade is sitting there looking on nervously, like sweat running down his face, and then Sora looks up and kind of does this like kind of gulping noise, like they're like, you know, oh geez, man. And I mean, you know, Blade is begging for another chance. And of course, you know, Beastman goes up and grovels and begging, pleading. But you just kind of feel like I'd prefer to think that he hasn't killed all of his evil warriors, and that, you know, that Cobra Khan, Triclops, and Two Bat are all running around working on other things.
Hey, maybe that's why they're at the movie. They all got killed or something.
And I don't want to think that, because but then that would mean that Blade, Sora, Beastman, and Karg are the best of the best, that they are the top four evil warriors, that Triclops and Webstor and Stinkor have all failed, and Skeletor's killed every single one of them.
Right.
So it's...
Now, who all had weapons that could have, like, just, you know, shot at Skeletor besides Solrod?
No, nobody would have. I mean, clearly, the look on Blade's face alone shows that he wasn't going to attempt anything.
Right.
Beastman definitely was. And Karg, has a pistol, but believe it, the guys, the brown nose of the group, there's no way he'd ever attempt that. And
did Beastman also have a pistol, too?
Beastman carries a pistol and a sword as well, but he's definitely, you know, definitely sounded like, you know, Sora knew that, okay, he's coming down at us. He's going to kill one of us. And he just kind of felt like
You think he's like the only one that had the guts? Like, Sauron's the only one that had the guts?
I'd like to think that, yeah, that Sauron felt like, he's going to kill one of us, I better act first. And I'd like to think that maybe that's how Sauron is. He acts on instinct. You know, yeah. if he feels that, you know, he's in a position of, like, danger, whether he's fighting He-Man or whatever, he's going to attack. I mean, we saw how he took on He-Man, you know, the claws coming in, and He-Man just tosses his butt, you know, right into Blade, but he ain't afraid to attack He-Man at all. He's not like Karg, where Karg is going after Julie, and then the power sword's thrown right in his face, and he just, you know, takes off.
Yeah, where it's like Sora, he's mysterious.
Sora's
like
got guts in this movie here.
Yeah. So,
He's
a mysterious character. He's one that, like you said, we never really got to see much of, because it was just
going by, you know. I mean, I want to believe that these characters, that obviously there's more to them, and it's fun to kind of come up with your own ideas. But based on what you see in the movie, Sauron is definitely not someone who's afraid of things. He's definitely, you know, he's precise. He's you know, you kind of think of it as somebody like when they're in the junkyard. He's the way he's kind of maneuvering around, like he's lurking, he's searching, he's calculating and looking for Julie. You know, he comes off as a very competent evil warrior, and just,
yeah. And, you know, not speaking, you know, not, well, obviously, you know,
he, and I like that, because, you know, you see in the comics what few appearances he does talk.
Yeah, and that's what's weird. So, like, you know, in, remember, Blade originally was not going to talk, and in the one comic, you know, didn't talk, but then he talks in this. But Sauron doesn't talk in here, but he did talk there. But I liked in the movie, I'm always like a sucker for the person that's got a mask, who doesn't talk, that lets their eyes and their movements speak for them.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah, shut up. So, no, but really, I like that, to where their eyes, their motions, that's what that speaks for them. So, like, when we go back to that part about how, you know, obviously Beastman, you know, he's not talking, but he's and groveling. He could show emotion. Blade can speak. Karg can speak. Sauron probably wouldn't have been able to show any weird. It wouldn't have looked right for him to grovel with some kind of emotion to Skeletor. So his character and this character,
I mean, he is respectful of Skeletor. I mean, when they all come in and they bow down at him, I mean, he's doing it just as much as all of them are.
Yeah, but I don't see him cowardly.
He's not a coward. He you know, respects is the Lord of Destruction, but. When you realize that, hey, one of us is going to get killed, we better, you know, I'd rather kill than be killed. And
yeah.
And maybe, I mean, because he goes right at Sora. So, I mean, Skeletor probably just felt like, you know what, I'm going to kill him.
You know?
Because he goes right at it, because Blade gets out of the way.
Uh-huh.
And Karg and Beastman, you know, it's like it's like Skeletor knew what he was going to do.
Yep.
And
maybe that's even something that maybe could have been in Sorod's race of creature, whatever he is, maybe he does sense danger. Maybe he has a way of knowing it was going to come after him. Because if you watch that frame, and if you want to, like, you know, just go ahead and use your imagination, it's almost like an Old West draw. Because
well, yeah, play it in slow-mo when Frank's hand comes up and comes down. I mean, Sorod's pistol is out. And yeah. When he gets hit, the pistol's off to the it's off to the side here. Okay, like I'm doing my hands up off to the side here.
It was like a simultaneous. It was pretty much at the same time. It was some kind of draw. So yeah, I what an underused character. It'd be great to see if, like you said, he could return too. Because I'd hate to think that people only want to categorize him for just being for the 87 movie. It's like, you know, no, he's now in Masters lore. If they ever made a movie, it'd be great to see him back. It'd be great to see him come in the cartoon.
Yeah, and I'd like to see him, Blade, and Carg all used more frequently throughout, sure. You know, new media, permitting they there's no issues of rights and uses of the character design and stuff like that. And of course, you know, William Stout is owed anything, you give that man his money.
Right.
But I want to see these characters used because to me they are just as important as Beastman and Merman are, yeah. of Evil Warriors. I mean, dude, for crying out loud, who wouldn't want any of those guys featured in any more He-Man media? I mean, it's from a visual standpoint and what the characters are, I'm like, why wouldn't you want them? You know,
sure. It's just sad because, like you said, some people want to just throw them into the movie, and that's the only place they belong is the 87 movie, so they don't get any other credit. But, yeah, they all deserve to come back, especially Sol-Rod. I'd love to see more of them. But,
and I'd like to keep him as a mute villain.
Yes.
I even in a new cartoon, unless they give him, you know, a really cool kind of robotic lizard-like voice or something like
that.
But even then, I'm like, you know what? I like, you know, not every villain has to talk. And I'm like, most all Skeletor's Evil Warriors talk. Sol-Rod needs to be the, you know, the mute one, the one that just reacts like his actions speak for him.
Right.
You know, I'd like to think of him as a silent assassin, kind of like Ninjor. You know, someone. I mean, because he's a lizard with you know robotics and you know all kinds of armor and enhancements and things like that. And I like to think that maybe the he's got those two. Spikes at the end of his mask there that maybe if he's approaching, you know, a particular prey that he kind of, you know, kind of sparks him up a little bit to kind of like, you know, like when Han Solo is being tortured and Empire Strikes Back and they lean his face against that torture device and it's like the sparks are flying out and stuff like
that. Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what would
I was thinking something like that. Sol-Rod is coming up to somebody to kind of intimidate them. Not to get crazy with it, but to kind of shoot some sparks to kind of intimidate someone up close with that, you know.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that. I was going to say that would be the surprise of bringing him back, whether it be in a movie or whatever capacity. But now he will use his spark feature. And what about that? Like, everybody's like, you know, beasts or whatever. Somebody's saying this, somebody's saying that. And they're always seeing Sol-Rod, and they're like, you know, like, you're pretty quiet. Don't you have something to say? And, you know, maybe he'd lean in towards him, and you'd see, like, a slight move in the mouth, and you're like, oh, my God, he's going to talk. But then when he opens it with the robotics, he goes, wah! And he shoots all the sparks in their face, blasts them, blind them. That'd be kind of cool. It'd be a surprise, especially thinking he's going to
speak. It's kind of like a Dilophosaurus moment in Jurassic Park where you're like, you know, what's up with this guy? And then boom, right in your face, you know?
Yeah. So he could be done, get some justice. So, oh, man. Well, that was a great talk on Sol-Rod and in the movie. But, well, I was going to say, before we wrap it up, man, what do you have to say? Epic moments, recommendations, what do you have, T-Rex?
My epic moment is to slam something that Joe said to me a while back about the He-Man movie, since, you know, we're in the 30th anniversary year, where Joe had told me that he felt that there were no big feats of strength featured.
Oh,
by
here we go. Go ahead.
And, I mean, as a kid, to watch He-Man, he's being, you know, cornered by the robot troops, Skeletor's mocking him, saying, you cannot hide from me, and then He-Man... His lips are bleeding. He's like already ready to go, and then gets a good field turner and shoves one of the space god statues down. And the music builds, and you're like, oh my gosh, He-Man just pushed over this massive statue. And
yeah, it was just a styrofoam statue.
Like this is what He-Man does. This he knocks over giant statues, you know, with one hand.
Then, well, why didn't they do?
And then Joe's like, man, I could customize something better than that.
Well, I didn't get that. You know, like I said, that's when every he does it, you know.
One hand! Yeah, like, hey, professor, I'm one hand on you.
No, you didn't. Oh, I like that. But no, remember when there's a feat of strength, that's when you got to hear He-Man. He didn't get to hear it. He didn't lift it up. He should have lifted that statue and then threw it.
Go sniff some sulfur.
All right. Well, I will. I got that thing right here. I'll be sniffing tonight. So, all right, man. Well, it was a good episode, T-Rex. So,
yeah, I look forward to doing, you know, character bios, and, you know, like on Blade and even Gweldor too. I'd like to think that even though they have not been used as much, that we can still come up with a good conversation about what we could see these characters do going forth. You know, Blade obviously is established to have a history with He-Man. Even that's what Anthony DeLonge just said about the character. So I'd like to think at some point this year we could tackle the other two.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Maybe Karg. I mean, even though, you know, Karg never got a figure, was only featured, I think, in the Star Comic magazine, stuff like that. Maybe,
because we don't have to, like you said, just because they maybe didn't, you know, appear in tons of media and have different, you know, interpretations, doesn't mean they can't be explored. Because, like I said, Sol Rod, he didn't really have much, so he was still a great character to discuss.
Yeah,
so.
A lot to talk about, and it's just, I mean, that's what's good about He-Man, that there's so many interesting characters that we can find stuff to say about. I mean, a lot of them. I mean, even if it was, I mean, you know, a character that was featured in one episode, or, you know, in one comic book. I mean, we could even do one on Goat Man if we wanted to. I mean, I'm sure.
You could.
It's one. He had what three pages of action or being featured, and that
we'll
was
make
it.
A whole story for that guy. We could do
We could do a whole all thing about anybody, I think.
Sure, definitely. So, all right, well, I'm going to tell everybody where to go. I'm going to tell them, go to...
I want to tell them where to go.
Not like that, but I'm going to tell you where to go. You're going to go to popculturenetwork.com, go to fansofpower.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe, He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group, all great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
What kind of a sick bitch takes the ice cube trays out of the freezer?
I don't know it.
I always feel like every time I do this, instead of just being cut off immediately, it's left with this silence as if like, okay, do the crickets whenever Tyler does his movie quote.
I try to.
You know, I just sit there and just kind of stare. And
give me a hint.
That's when Doug needs to cue the crickets, because Joe just sitting there. It's like, for all you know, Joe could have just fallen asleep behind the mask, and he's just sitting there.